My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode. It is a new week, and this is a new Pixels and Polygons. This is the first official episode where we can talk about being under the Soundstone Network banner. So the Soundstone Network is a podcast collective where independent shows like mine kind of all work together, and instead of just being on our own little islands, we're pulling our resources and pulling what we do just to kind of help, instead of just promoting our own shows, helping to do things to kind of help promote all of us. So you may have noticed some ads in previous episodes, Kirby Conversations and Flashback 64. Those are two of the other shows that are on the network at this time. So yeah, look forward to more cross-promotional things and more things that kind of just help support all of our shows as we continue to do, you know, what it is we love doing here in the podcast medium. So super excited to work with those folks and see where it takes us. So Rad, this is the start of it all right now for us. So hopefully that means, you know, cool stuff in the horizon for us here at Pixels and Polygons, or for me here. It's a solo endeavor, but yeah, you get the deal. I've got a returning guest to the show. We've got Dave from Tales from the Backlog. It was a really fun conversation. He decided to pull out the question that sometimes can be, you know, interesting to answer, but the hot take question, you know. So give us a gaming hot take that you have, and then we'll have a discussion around that. So it was fun to chat with Dave about that. And if you haven't already checked out his show, those details will be in the show notes below, where you can find more information about his podcast and give him follow on his socials and everything. He does a super rad show. It is just really well done. I love listening to it, and it's really broken up in a way that even if the episode you're looking at, you haven't played the game necessarily, like the first bulk of the episode is all spoiler free, and it's specifically like done and tailored and edited that way. And then there is a specific wall where they'll warn you, where they will get into story spoilers. But it's just a cool way to just kind of look at a game and have it analyzed and discussed and broken down in a way from just people who really love playing games. So give Dave's show a listen and a subscription. It's super rad. And otherwise, yeah, I've got recently shipped out for Kickstarter backers all the Retro Gamezine issue 5, 6, and 7. But Retro Gamezine issue 5 is the current issue. That's the newest issue anyway, the May issue. That's available now on pixelsandpolygons.net. You can also buy it digitally over on my Patreon at patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. You can get all my books and all the zines and everything that way as well. And that's the business as usual stuff y'all know about. But otherwise, that's all I've got for you for this week. Yeah, check out the show notes below. You can see the soundstone.network website, where you can check out the other two shows on the Soundstone Network. And if you had any other likes and follows in ya, please give them to those shows. Otherwise, we'll catch you all next week with another new episode, and hope you enjoy this one. Cool. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooley, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I've got now, now we get to say returning guest to the show. We've got Dave from Tales from the Backlog. Welcome back to the show, Dave. How you doing?
Yeah, doing good. It's been a long time, but good to be back on the show, and I'm excited to do our topic here.
Yeah, I appreciate the attempt to play into the fact that this is being heard weeks later, but it is being recorded moments after the last episode we recorded. But thank you for playing along. Yeah, that last episode was fun. If you hadn't listened to that, you can go back on whatever podcast platform you're listening on and find that previous episode. But it was a good conversation on narrative and gameplay. But here, we're here to do something different. But before that gets started, you ready for some this or that questions in our icebreaker? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's see. Let's kind of feel you out a little bit more here. Tekken or Street Fighter?
Neither. I hate both. I hate fighting games.
Mm.
There's a hot take, but it's not from my hot take list.
You just haven't played the right one yet, it sounds like.
I'm going to go with Street Fighter because I've played like three of those and I've never played a Tekken.
Okay. All right. Well then, Mario or Sonic?
Ooh, Mario in a landslide. Not close. You're giving me like pre hot takes with these.
Samus or Master Chief?
Samus. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll talk about her later.
Oh, ooh. Okay. Fox or Falco?
Ooh. I'm going to go with Falco cause he's better in Smash Brothers.
Okay. Jack and Daxter or Ratchet and Clank?
Ratchet and Clank by default. I've played one Ratchet and Clank game and I've never jacked a Daxter. That sounded gross.
Oh my gosh, that's the soundbite. Okay, so the analog and then the D-pad underset that, or the D-pad with the analog underset that? So like the Xbox style kind of layout or the PlayStation controller style layout, modern controllers?
I'm going to be honest with you, I don't notice. I play both. I have both controllers that I use regularly and I don't notice at all.
Okay. All right, then let's do one more.
Yeah.
A DLC or a sequel? So would you rather have like kind of piece fed, like a little bit more of a game you love, or would you rather wait and get that sequel?
Sequel. I have this weird thing where I kind of like close the book on a game once I finish it. And if DLC comes out like 6 months later, I have a hard time getting back in the mood of that game. So I'd rather wait, you know, however many years and get a sequel.
Mm, yeah, I understand that. I was present for the live release of all of the Mass Effect games. And I think having that time between like helped me like reemerge, so like literally starting the story again and being reintegrated into the characters and being reintroduced to them. It made sense because in real time we needed to be reminded of those.
Yeah.
People who play them modern and like play like that remastered trilogy or whatever it may be and jump from one into the other, like, you know, it might be a detriment to like a slog of like, oh my gosh, like I already know all these people. I already know this stuff. Why are we reiterating this stuff? Like I know,
but yeah,
we didn't know that in those years between those releases, but okay.
Yeah.
Let's get into our icebreaker then. Since the blood is flowing, who would you want in your party on an adventure to save the world? So right now you need to save the world and you can pick, let's say three people. You know, a nice party of four. What three people are you going to bring along with you? These could be like video game characters. This could be anything. There's no real limitation here. Get weird and creative or whatever you want.
I'm going to take Superman because if we're going on a thing to save the world, I'm still me. So I need someone to cover for my deficiencies. So,
got it. Superman does it.
Superman's going to cover for most of my deficiencies, if not all of them. So let's go with Superman. We need someone to keep us focused on the quest. So we're going to take Jack from Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin, because he has a one track mind only focused on the task at hand. We'll just tell Jack that we need to kill chaos to save the world and we'll be focused. We will not get sidetracked at all. And then we need comic relief in the group. So Let's see.
It's a perfect time to jack that Daxter, but you haven't played that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. Could mess my whole group up. Let's see. So comic relief. We're going to take Ichiban from Like a Dragon. Ichiban is fantastic. He's a goofball. Also very focused on the task at hand. He sees himself as a hero, but he's a big goober, so give me him.
That is such a strange party, but I mean, like,
yes it is.
Could it's it get the job weird. Done? I think it could definitely get the job done. I think the world could be saved with those yeah. folks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for playing along there. We'll move into the prime topic. We talked about it in the last episode. I shared, you know, I'm not really that negative type of person. And again, I'm not necessarily looking for us to get hard and negative here or anything. But sometimes it's still like, you know, we as individuals, we as people, we may have a difference of opinion with that popular consensus of what's going on out there in the gaming world. But some hot takes. What is an opinion that you have that you know goes against the popular consensus about something out there in the gaming landscape?
Yeah. All right. So I have four that I wrote down. They range from like pretty niche all the way to like very general. So I don't know where you want me to start. I know we don't have to do all four of them, obviously, but we get.
Yeah, I mean, dealer's choice. Yeah. I mean, I'm curious to hear either end of the spectrum. So, yeah.
Okay. So I'll go with my like super niche one first, because I actually feel very strongly about this. Have you played Xenogears?
Yes.
Okay. My hot take is that Xenogears Disc 2 is awesome, and it is not not what I hear out there. I don't think that the combat in Xenogears holds up for 80 hours, and so Disc 2 has barely any combat, barely any dungeon crawling, and it has all the stuff that I love about Xenogears. It has the story. It has the music. It has, you know, character arcs and all that stuff, and you learn what's going on in the story and all of that. I loved Disc 2 of Xenogears because I was tired of dungeon crawling and doing the combat with the Street Fighter combos and all that stuff. Like, get that stuff out. Let me just, it's like people say, like, I hook this in my veins. This is what I want. That's what Disc 2 of Xenogears is. It's hooking the story into your veins.
Yeah, I mean, it was like one of those moments where, I mean, there's, if you read about the developmental history of it and everything, like, you know, you can read into like development time was running short, you know, they're running into some inexperienced kind of like, you know, folks, they needed to wrap it, you know, urgently, and they weren't on time. So they kind of had to shift some gears. What was the other option for them? You know, either like this massive delay and windfall or total cancellation. But the fact that they were able to kind of creatively pivot into more of like this, you know, storytelling offshoot of what the game was that you were just primarily playing and driving through is a hard pivot, and it is very unique. And I don't know that you've ever seen anything like that to that like level, even since then. Like, it's like I said, like, I think nowadays you would either have a game just have to be canceled or like lose funding, or like, oh cool, I guess we can't finish our original idea, so here is a watered down version of that maybe. But they were like, no, we've got this crazy story, we can't just end this here. There isn't a way we could put a bow on what we've developed up through at this point. So let's get creative. Let's use our budget. Let's use our time. Let's whatever that thing's going on in the background there that caused that team to need to shift those gears. But Xenogears. But it was very unique. And I think I can't hold that against them. But yeah, there are some folks who just cannot stand that the game just like fell off its own rails essentially and wasn't even, it's incomplete. It's not finished. Wow, what are you doing? But it was.
It's insane to me. The game is finished. It's just you don't do a lot of dungeon crawling and combat during the, and you don't do world exploration in the second disc. But like, the story is 100% finished. Mm-hmm. So that's not the right word to talk about it. It was very extremely overambitious, and they were faced with the idea of like, do we cut it here and then try to finish it in another game? When that's not guaranteed, even back then, though, I think they made the right choice to just finish the story and then move on to their next projects. And from what I can tell, that team and the creator Takahashi always coming up with these super ambitious, maybe over ambitious ideas. Yeah, that's my hot take. I played Xenogears for the first time like last year, and I really loved Disc 2. Like, it's basically a visual novel, and it's just all the things that I love the most about the game just in that second disc condensed.
Yeah, I put that in. Well, I did some research on that game because the books I do, 32-bit library books, like die out different chunks of the PlayStation library. And the fourth volume that I had just most recently done is like Square, Atlas, Enix, and Working Designs. Like all of their games are in it. But diving in and like diving into Xenogears was fun to do for that. And just like reading more about the game's history. Like there's really early developmental seeds in there where there was intentionality for it to be a potential sequel to Chrono Trigger. You know, not that, you know, anything of what we're seeing and playing in the game is actually was from those same moments. But that team was essentially tasked with potentially working and drafting and pitching a potential Chrono Trigger sequel there with that. And then it even at one point even navigated into being a potential idea pitch for what would be Final Fantasy VII. And ultimately that was also like, hey, you know what? This is kind of, these are some dark themes, some dark threads. Yeah. You know, maybe this is too much. Maybe we pivot this into something else, you know? And then ultimately that team got to be like, okay, cool. Maybe it's better that we don't have a tether to any of these like legacy like franchises to have to build off of, and we can do something kind of original here, which I think was better for them. Yeah, it's such a unique game. And then then you start getting into Xeno Saga, where Namco picks up the reins, and while it's not directly and officially like connected, you know, for all intents and purposes, there are some thematic and like overarching like connective tissue essentially in the background for fans who really want to dive in. I don't know what those are. I've just, you know, I just know that they're there. And then even now into the Xenoblade games, which kind of does the same thing as they pivoted from Namco to Nintendo, and Monolith has continued their Xeno train.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely like pet themes that keep recurring. I haven't played the Xeno sagas, but I played all the Xenoblade Chronicles games. So there's definitely recurring things that that come up. So I'm glad that eventually I think that Takahashi got to work out some of those things and like finally stick the landing, as it were, with Xenoblade Chronicles 3 and that DLC. So it's cool. I like how we're doing the hot take episode. We started with like a very positive hot take, right? It's like this thing that a lot of people says it sucks. I actually think it's great, and it's probably my favorite part of the game is the part that everyone else says is terrible. So there we go.
Yeah, so we're keeping a spin on it. But that being said, then what's what's this next one? Is this next one finding a positive spin on a potentially negative topic?
It's okay. So my other hot take, the first one that came to my mind when we settled on this topic is I've played Castlevania Symphony of the Night and I've played Super Metroid, and I don't think they're the best game in either series, let alone their place in history should be celebrated, and all the acclaim that comes with like revolutionizing this type of game that's like one of the most popular genres of games out there. But I don't think Symphony of the Night is in my top five Castlevania games, and Super Metroid is not in my top three 2D Metroid games. So that's my hot take, is that they set a bar, but people tend to hold them up as like these perfect examples of game design. And I don't think they're even the best in their own series. Like even if we're talking about like the ones that follow the same structure. So like, I really love Castlevania 2, but it's a very different game from Symphony of the Night. The ones on the Game Boy Advance, I like all three of those more than Symphony of the Night, and so on into the DS and stuff like that, from what I've played around with. And then basically, I think that every 2D Metroid game that I've played after Super Metroid, I like all of them more. I have not played the one on the Wii that everybody hates, but the other ones,
Other M.
I've not played Other M. And maybe I like Super Metroid more than the remake of Metroid 2 on the 3DS, but AM2R, the fan remake of Metroid 2, I like that more than Super Metroid. It's just a thing that like I hear these games put up as like nothing will ever touch these two perfect Metroidvanias. I'm like, play more games in their own series.
Yeah, you see, I mean, I was still in high school, but I remember thinking like, I want to make a list of like my favorite games. I want to like force rank these. I want to know what I think my favorite game is and everything. And so I remember settling on a top five, and it was Final Fantasy VII, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, Super Mario 64, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, Metal Gear Solid. Boom. That was Darren Hupke's top five games of all time. And
perfect.
So they've just been burned into my brain, and I still essentially consider those my five favorite games of all time. Though I think all of those games I've played better versions of since then, you know? And I just I grapple with how can I say something's better than Symphony of the Night if it's like that first one that I loved of that and that inspired a lot of these things and everything. But, you know, to be honest, like you mentioned, I think Aria of Sorrow might be the best like 2D Castlevania, or Dawn of Sorrow, the DS one, or Dawn of Souls, whatever the DS moniker was for that.
Yeah, Aria of Sorrow's, that's my favorite Castlevania of the ones that came after, of the ones that are following that same kind of formula. Aria of Sorrow is my favorite.
Yeah. And it had cool style to it. It had more refinements to the gameplay and balance. I think the pacing were better. I think there was a little bit more originality, like, and kind of injected into it. And they tried to do, you know, new things finally, you know, with the series in general. But yeah, I have an Alucard tattoo on me. And so I have to still somehow convince myself that no, Symphony of the Night, like, is still going to be up there. But if I was to force rank my like games again and all that stuff, like, I think my whole top five would be completely shaken up and changed for sure. From what it was when I was 16 or 17, and I'm 38 now. Like, I've played more games from then to now than what I did from birth to that point, you know? So why am I giving myself so much power of a teenage version of me to have this top five list that's not accurate?
Yeah. Well, those games are special for a lot of reasons. Like, just, you know, even if we just want to say, we talk about Super Metroid and Symphony of the Night, they're special games for what they did for their own series. They're special for kind of revolutionizing a type of game, a type of structure. And they're special for a lot of people with their experiences. Like, I can imagine if I had a Super Nintendo and played Super Metroid right when it came out, it would have blown me away compared to the games I would have played before. And I would hold it in higher regard. But I played both of these for the first time maybe 5 years ago. Mm. So I had played things that came later, and I think, as my hot take goes, things that improved on it. And then once you get outside of those series, I think that there are others in the genre that are just head and shoulders above those experiences. It doesn't take away from people's love of those games, but the hot take is that I think there are, you know, games within the series. I haven't said my Metroid one, in case people are wondering. I think the Game Boy Advance games are better, both of them. And I know
Fusion,
a lot of people
love Fusion. Yeah,
people take issue with Fusion. Maybe that should be my hot take, is that Fusion is awesome. There's Fusion's a lot of people that don't like that game.
I think that might be my favorite Metroid game, but yeah.
It's very good. And it's, you know, it's a little bit different structure, and it's not as open, and you can't do as much of the nonlinear shenanigans that you can do in some of the other ones, but that doesn't matter a whole lot to me. I don't mind that. People gave the same criticism to Metroid Dread, and I have my own issues with Metroid Dread, but, you know, linearity is not one of them. So yeah, it's not like a crazy hot take. I'm not up here saying that Symphony of the Night and Super Metroid are bad games or something, but
yeah.
Those are the two golden ones in the genre. I mean, basically they named the genre after those two games. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think that there's been a lot of better games since.
Yeah. Well, I love that you're this hot take as well. It is not that these games were bad. It is that, you know, there are better in the genre sense and everything.
Yeah.
And so still no negativity here. So we're on a good train. And again, I'm ready for it. If it does jump off the rails, that's totally fine. But, let's see. What's the next one then that you've got?
I don't have like flaming, you know, super negative hot takes about you. I think that most games that are beloved deserve it in one way or another, because somebody, or like, you know, a group of people, a large group of people, have found the joy in all of that stuff. Like, I was thinking would be a hot take to come up here and say that like Fortnite's actually really good or something like that, but like, people love Fortnite. Like, there's a reason that it's so popular and so many people love it of so many different ages. Like, that wouldn't be a hot take. The one that I guess I'll throw out that I feel strongly about is, I'm a huge From Software fan. I've started to revisit their games from the PS2, and I've played and loved all of their modern games except for the VR one. And my hot take for the From Software fans is that the boss fights are the least interesting part of those games. I think focusing on difficulty and boss fights, and I'm guilty of this too. I've done whole podcasts just about boss fights in one From Software game. So I'm on this too. Like I'm culpable as well. But the hot take is that focusing on those things ignores the actual like secret sauce and the things that From Software is actually best in class at, in my opinion. I don't think that they're best in class at making action combat systems. Their combat can be pretty janky, even. You just kind of get used to how it works. What they're actually great at is they make the best levels to explore in gaming, in my opinion. They are impeccable with art direction, enemy design. If you want to follow the way they tell stories, I think it's really neat. And I think that the stories that are there to be uncovered are most often very interesting and cool. But the hot take is that, like, when I get to a boss in a From Software game, I kind of just like get through it however I can. I don't revel in a new boss fight to fight 30 to 50 times. I'm just like, there's another level after this boss. I can't wait to get to that level. It's going to be really cool. I think they do that better than anybody in gaming, is make levels that are fun to explore. And the hot take is that the bosses are not the secret sauce. The bosses in the combat and the difficulty are not the secret sauce.
Yeah, that's a good hot take. I mean, like, because there are people who will swear by, like, that's the thing, like that FromSoft like boss fight, that Souls like boss rush, you know, is what makes those games kind of special and unique and everything. But
you have like the challenge runners, right? Like that's the thing that they do is I'm going to try to beat Elden Ring at level one using a broken sword and you know, no armor and stuff like that. And like, I'm not trying to take away the joy of doing that challenge from those people. But in my opinion, looking at the games, it's cool that you can do that. It's a very cool way that they design the game so that you can beat the entire game with a soup ladle and stuff like that. Like it's gated more by your skill than your stats. It's cool the way they do that. And if you're good enough, you can do anything you want in those games. But again, I think that what's actually good and what keeps people coming back is, I feel like it's hidden for a lot of people, and they like, or maybe they just derive different joy from them. I don't want to assume that everyone sees these games the same way I do, but
No, I think it's the joy of it. Yeah. It isn't, I mean, you just, you know, kind of shared and realized that same thing too. The joy you have out of them, like you think like, I mean, it would be great if more people were able to see that and find that value in like the way that they're they're not heavy handed in their storytelling and like the lore and all stuff, like the atmosphere and the environments do a lot of storytelling within that as well too. Like you pick up on that wavelength and you dig that. Like you that's rad. Other players, they may approach it and want just that challenge, that brutal difficulty out of it and all that stuff. So I think it's a very amazing and a cool thing that those two types of people can play this one game and still find like the same amount of joy out of it and everything. So I guess we can only praise that for happening, I'm with you there. Yeah. The From Software stuff, I've never gotten my head around. I've been intimidated by the challenge of it, but people tell me that playing Monster Hunter, like, you know, you should be able to play a Souls game. Like, you know, that's not too different. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, but then, I realized like after like watching more gameplay and doing things, like, you know what it is? It is just understanding like the jank, you know, quote unquote, or just like understanding the mechanics and the limitations. Like, cool, I'm invulnerable when I do this, or if I put some space between me, this, and just because this character model is the size of a massive building doesn't mean that I'm going to be hurt by touching every inch of it. Like, you can still find a spot where like, oh, I'm free to wail away over here and then dodge and regroup and everything. So yeah, it's a series of things I should probably go back and try again. I did play early FromSoft games, again, being, you know, an old dude. I remember PS1, like Armored Core games and like some of the classic ones. And I remember when Elden Ring was announced, I instantly thought of like that weird, like pale guy with that Tunic holding like the glowing ring, and there was a PS2 launch game called Eternal Ring, and I'm like, right. Oh, I wonder if this is like a remake or a continuation of this bizarre game that nobody else clearly remembers besides me. Like, why isn't anybody talking about Eternal Ring? I think it's just fun. Like, they do some funky things, and I love that they've done what they've done for so long. They didn't have to change to find success. Luckily, somehow, lightning in a bottle, like, people found love for their jank, and that got to, like, that success then allowed for them to put in so much more in art direction, atmosphere, sound design, music, and, like, it allowed them to put, like, this AAA kind of sheen on their, like, you know, just junk. Like, their games are, like, are busted sometimes, but, like, it's fun. Yeah. Like, it's not, I don't want to say they're, like, bad because they're, like, doing their jobs bad. They have this very particular, like, mechanics and gameplay elements, and they do them specifically. Like, they know there's going to be limitations within it, and they're good at what they do. And it's just fun to see them over the years, like, actually finally get their flowers for that and have some success in that. And, you know, now be able to basically have a blank check to do whatever they want to do going forward for a little while, at least.
Yeah. It's just like when I tell people that I'm a huge fan of the Dark Souls and Elden Ring and Bloodborne and all of that, they automatically assume like, oh, you're a big challenge guy. Like you love to spend an entire day fighting the same boss. And I'm like, I actually hate that. Like, I love the games because they, like, if I see a big castle in a From Software game, I'm like a little kid again. I'm like, that's going to be so fun to go through that castle and find treasure and find secrets and stuff, because they're so good at that stuff. And it kind of gets lost in, like, you know, every time you see, and props to these people, but every time you see like a clip of someone beating Elden Ring on a DDR, you know, dance pad or something, people are like, wow, the challenge. And I'm like, that's not what I'm here for, but it is cool that it has something for everyone like that in a game that is so like oppressive in a lot of ways. There is something to appeal to very, very different types of experiences that people want to have.
Yeah. So you don't think you'll pull out the Rock Band drum set and blindfold beat any of these games anytime soon?
I don't think so. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Going on record, I don't think that's going to happen.
I know you had four prepped. I mean, we're kind of at that sweet spot. No, so if I was going to say, if you want to share it, you can. But I think we did our thing. So, I mean, it's totally up to you. I don't have a hard stop on this at all by any means. So if you... if you're good, if you're good, we're good then.
Yeah, the other one's a secret.
Okay, then we'll maybe have to save that then for a future episode then, you know, if we come back on and do another hot take one, you know, but there's plenty of other questions in my list, and I'm always trying to cook up different ones too. So yeah, I hope we have you on for sure in the future. I hope you had some fun chatting with me then. Oh, yeah. These were really cool to do. So you definitely have an open invite to come back if you ever want to participate and take on that, you know, the single question challenge. A little bit of a different show than the full-on like analysis and introspective like look at a game that, you know, you spend a lot of time with doing over on your show. You're always welcome to come back in here. Any other final thoughts or plugs or anything? I want to make sure I give you space for that just in case at the end here before we wrap up.
It's been a good time. I appreciate you having me back on for another one and opening the invitation in the future. I'll definitely be back. It's just fun to talk about games and fun to kind of narrow the focus for you know, a single question like this, as you said. So I guess if people have not heard the previous episode we did, then I just direct them to my show. If you want long, detailed analysis, deep dives of single video games in each episode, I do a show called Tales from the Backlog, where every episode is usually a backlog game of mine, something I've had for a while. I do new releases, but I my workflow means that even episodes about new release games come out months later. So I'm never on the cutting edge. I'm always on that, like, okay, now you've played the whole game, come listen to my show. We'll do the deep dive. But the other part of that is you can listen to any episode because every episode is no spoiler for a little while. Like, we don't need to spoil things to talk about the combat system, so we don't spoil things until we have to, basically. And then after that point, full spoiler discussion. So any episode you can listen, you're safe if you're sensitive to spoilers. So the show's on YouTube. We do video versions, and then it's also on every podcast app if you just want the audio as well. So that's Tales from the Backlog.
Oh, I didn't realize you did a video version of it. I'm just subscribed on.
Recently started doing that. Yeah, very recent.
Cool. Yeah. And another thing too, I think it's also good because I've actually listened to a couple episodes for this reason. But if you haven't played the game, the way that you have the conversation, the way you kind of lead through in the episodes, it is. It's like it's an analysis. It's a deep dive into it. It's a real like. Just healthy look at the games themselves. Like, you can find out if maybe a game you were curious about is worth and maybe investing some time in, because the way you speak about it, you don't have to worry about those spoilers. It is very clear when you're going to start that and everything. So, a few episodes I've confidently been able to jump in and listen to, knowing that like I've been semi curious in the game. And after hearing you talk about it, it's helped me either make that call or know that maybe this isn't for me, and then kind of keep listening and everything. So, yeah, big recommendation for me. Check it out. Subscribe to it. My show exists anyway, being, you know, 20 to 30 minutes. It's the perfect podcast between podcasts. So if on a long drive, you wrap up a long episode, of Dave's, and you've got, you know, only 30 minutes to go to your destination, boom, that's where Pixels and Polygons comes in. You slot me in there and your drive is complete. Well, thank you for jumping on the show. We'll definitely have you back in the future if you're up to it. And yeah, it's fun chatting with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have a good one, y'all.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.